Hi everyone, it's Lynn, and today on the Actors Diet Podcast, my guest is Katie Dalebout. Katie is an author. She wrote a book called Let It Out, A Journey Through Journaling, and she also hosts a podcast called Let It Out. It's not totally about journaling, but she does mention journaling sometimes. And Katie and I met via another podcaster. Her name is Jessica Murnan. I'm on her podcast, One Part Podcast. She also has a site called One Part Plant, and she is a cookbook author. Anyway, this is just an example of how much I love the internet, because it connects people from all around the country. People who would have never known each other, and now we text each other random things about what we eat. Where are you right now? You said you're not at home. You're at a friend's house.
I'm just at a friend's house. Yeah, I'm still in Detroit where I live. I was in Chicago yesterday, but I got home late last night, and I'm here. And my friend has a pool, and so I usually come here, or I've been coming here every weekend, and we'll just like have sleepovers. And she's an amazing cook, so she actually, I walked in, I was like, oh my God, it smells amazing in here. She has like healthy brownies in the oven for us. And we're going to watch Stranger Things. And yeah.
Are you, you're not finished with it, I'm assuming?
No, I'm not. So.
Okay.
No spoilers.
I'm jealous of everything that you get to experience Stranger Things.
Over.
And that you're going to about to eat these brownies. Tell me a little bit more about
tomorrow.
Them. What's in them?
Well, yeah, exactly. But I did see an Instagram story of them right when I got out of the car that looked beautiful. They have figs on the top, like baked in, like you would do with banana bread, you know?
Stop.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. And every time, my friend Amanda is a health coach and a eating psychology coach and just, you know, really cool person and my best friend here. And so we always have like healthy things, healthy versions of things. So I'm assuming there's probably some, maybe some almond butter included in here. I'm assuming there's definitely some coconut oil, some natural sweetener, just some, definitely some cacao, and I don't know whatever else secret ingredients she put in there, but I'm real excited. I know that much.
I'm so excited for you. You are in for the night of your life.
Right? I know. I wish you could come over for a sleepover.
I wish I could too. So when you were growing up going to sleepovers, what kind of foods were you eating then?
Oh, man. Sleepovers. Definitely pizza. I'm Midwestern. I grew up in the Midwest, and I still live there now. Not where I grew up, but in the Midwest. And yeah, so I'm thinking pizza was delivered a lot. I remember one particular best friend that I had, and her parents, I thought this was so cool, but they let us call and order the pizza ourselves. And I was never allowed to do that. And I'm an only child, so I grew up very smothered and very like babied and very much I had a hover parents, my mom in particular. My parents are divorced, but everything was like, I wasn't able to, you know, like do things by myself or like go on a bike ride, or like I was very supervised. And so the fact that I was able to order the pizza on my own was like the most amazing thing in the world. So I remember.
Okay, do it with me right now.
Okay,
ready?
So yes.
Okay, hello. Can I take your order?
Hi, Hungry Howies. How are you?
We're great. We're hungry and we're howie.
It had a cheese crust situation. Like you could customize your crust. That's all I remember. And of course we customized it with more cheese because that's just what you did then.
Oh my God.
And that's really all I remember. Probably like cheese and more cheese and some sort
of
crust.
Hungry Howie's is still around.
Yeah. Well, feel free to sponsor this.
I'm wondering if Hungry Howie's is now all online ordering where you can just check cheese on the crust situation.
I'm sure. Is Hungry Howie's like a Midwestern thing? Have you heard of it?
I've never heard
of
really?
Hungry Howie's. Okay, it must be a Midwestern thing.
It's a chain, I'm assuming.
Yes, it's definitely a chain. It might even just be a Michigan thing. I'm not sure. Unclear. I'll find out. I'll report back.
Exciting.
Yeah,
Exciting stuff.
very exciting.
So you grew up eating stuff like pizza?
Yeah, stuff like pizza, definitely. My mom work still does, but works a ton, and so she didn't cook really at all. My dad cooked a lot, and he actually would cook like in the middle of the night if he like woke up late, he would like cook a full meal. Like he would make like a gourmet like a steak and a side dish and a vegetable like late at night if he woke up. I remember that. My parents divorced when I was like 12, so I remember that from when I was young that he would do that, and he would be the one to make dinner usually when I was younger. But then when my parents divorced, my mom like she was so great and would try to kind of cook, but she could really only make like two things. And
What were those two
she
things?
made this thing called taco pie. And again, probably a Midwestern thing.
Nothing wrong with it.
And I don't really know exactly what went into it, but I do know that Doritos were involved as the crust.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was like a Doritos for a crust. And I actually hated it, but she would make it.
Why?
I don't know.
Too salty?
I just didn't like it. And probably that I had it so much, and it was, how you get that way with things that were kind of like the only option when you were growing up. It just was not my favorite. And I think I kind of got that way about all kind of junk food or what people would, I like you don't like to put foods in camps of good or bad, but what would have been characterized as, the typical foods like fast food or pizza or taco pie or things like that. And
Yeah, what was the other thing that she made?
the other thing, that and she would try really just that. I'm trying to think of
Just
another
variations on taco pie.
literally like I'm trying to think of another thing that was like a recipe that she would make. I mean, she would, we would have like breakfast for dinner and that sort of thing, which was amazing and you can't really mess up, but that was really basically it. I mean, sandwiches and that's that kind of that stuff that's not really cooking per se, but we did a lot of takeout. So we would get, my mom still loves sushi. She loves her some sushi and some
And she loves
tempura.
ordering it and not letting you order it.
Yes, exactly. Still to this day.
That's funny.
But yeah, so we would get like a lot of takeout, like sushi, and what else would we get? We kind of had like our same like go-tos that we would kind of get every week. And I also, my grandma would pick me up from school a lot, and my grandma would cook, and she was the queen of, we've got nothing in the house, but she makes something of nothing and just kind of throws together something, and we have a salad and we have a chicken or we have whatever is there and makes it, and it's somehow delicious and she makes it work. She was kind of the queen of that. So sometimes I would eat with my grandparents like before my mom would get home from work. So that was kind of the cooking that I was around. But with my mom, it was really taco pie and takeout.
That's the name of a new book, another book.
Yeah, exactly.
Taco Pie and Takeout, your
Taco
next
pie and
book.
takeout. My childhood with food.
Did you cook?
Not really. I remember coming home from school when I was old enough to be by myself, which, to my mom is like last year. But I remember coming home from school and like always needing a snack and just kind of throwing together things like peanut butter sandwiches or and doing like really strange things with them. Like I remember microwaving my peanut butter and jelly so it would be warm. Like I don't know if like I didn't have a concept that I could like grill it and flip it like a grilled cheese or like find a panini maker or something, but
It's like
microwaving.
you wanted a hot meal and you
Yeah.
wanted it
But
fast.
that was like the only thing I knew. That was like the main kitchen appliance that my childhood knew. So no, I didn't really cook at all. I remember one time I tried to make eggs and I got like violently ill the next day because I don't think I like cooked them through. My mom said to me, this was like in middle school or high school, and she was like, it's because you cooked those eggs and you don't know how to cook eggs and you poisoned yourself with salmonella. But I don't think that's true because I would have raw eggs like licking brownie batter all through my childhood and I was fine. So, but anyway, my attempts at cooking were not great until I really didn't learn to cook, and even now I'm not a great cook at all, and I don't cook often at all. But I used to cook quite a bit in college and right after college when I got really, really into
healthy foods and healthy eating because that was my only option because I was also really in an eating disorder, and that was all I allowed myself to eat was really food that I prepared, because the options where I lived, it's not like where you live in LA where there's so many different options for healthy food or vegan food or raw food or gluten-free foods and all these parameters I had put on myself. I had to learn to cook by necessity because I only allowed myself to eat that way. So in retrospect, it kind of gave me this way of learning to cook some things.
Let's talk a little bit about your eating disorder since it's on the table
right
now.
Since I brought it up.
What would you characterize your eating disorder as?
Well, I think it started, what I was technically diagnosed with when I was in treatment for it was anorexia. But I think the way that when I realized I had a problem and was significantly underweight and had been doing these things that were controlling my weight for aesthetic reasons and doing really unhealthy behaviors around that, I think when I realized that and had so many people concerned with me and treatment for that, I was like, okay, I've got this. I'm just going to cure it with orthorexia, basically. So the obsession with healthy foods and healthy eating. And I was just like, I'll just eat more, but I'll eat more only of these specific foods. So then that way I'll gain some weight, but I won't gain all of the weight, or I won't gain over a certain amount. And I think that was kind of my way of allowing myself to eat more, but still having parameters around myself that I didn't freak out too quickly, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. When did the whole anorexia part develop?
So I was in college when it started. And I think, you know, when you're younger, don't have as much control of when you're in middle school or high school, when you're a child, you don't have much control of, for me, like nothing, because like I said before, my mom was so overly involved, but you don't have control of your schedule, or you're not the one doing the shopping or buying the food. And so there was only so much I could control what I was eating or how much I was moving, but I always wanted to. I remember making a choice when I was like 8 or 9 years old, that I somehow realized that what you ate would impact how much you weighed or how your clothes fit or what size you were. And I was never the biggest kid in class, but I was never the smallest either. I was more on the side of the bigger kids. And my mom has always been heavy ever since I was born. And I remember just feeling anxiety around that. And, you know, obviously we grew up in this culture that really intensifies all of that. So I made this choice when I was like 8 years old, and I was like, I can never eat more than my friends do. If they have 2 pieces of pizza, I can have 2, but I could never have 3, even if I want 3. Or if they have 1, I have 1. And it was just this like conscious choice I made as a child, being like, well, if I do that, then I'll look like them, which is so silly, but something that really kind of carried over as I got older. And I was just really under, and I think it's something that's pretty common of, you know, if 2 women are out to lunch and one goes with mac and cheese, the other might be like, oh, I'm gonna go with mac and cheese. Or if one gets a salad, they might get the salad too. You know, you just kind of feel that camaraderie with food of kind
that
of wanting
is
to.
So interesting. You are right. It is when women, or at least straight women, eat with other women, as opposed to with the men.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
It's a gendered thing. It is so interesting because I get no shit from my male friends if I order a salad. And actually, I don't really get shit from anyone. That's not true. But my female friends will will say things like, oh man, just like, come on, order this with me.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I was actually on another podcast, the OMFG podcast. Do you know that podcast?
I don't, but I'm going to write it down. OMFG podcast.
It's really cool. It's like an anthropological study of young people. So my friends, Deanna and Emily, they're in LA. They're your neighbors, basically.
Oh, cool.
Talking about LA like it's like this tiny baby town. But anyway, they have on people who are all sorts of people, artists or bloggers or musicians or anyone, but they're all under 25 and under. So they give them phrases or like things, they just talk about, you know, what is current and what is new, because to keep Emily and Deanna, they're comedians and they're so funny and it's just, it's an interesting podcast. But anyway, I was on their podcast and Emily was saying that whenever she goes out to lunch, she always wants to know what the other person's ordering first, because then she'll be like, oh, well, I'm going to switch my order based on that. And it really like got me thinking, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. And I've been doing that like basically since I was a child.
Yeah.
Just so
you
weird.
Were a kid,
saying. It was like my first kind of eating disorder ish tendency. And so anyway, like I said, it just basically intensified when I got older, and then, but again, didn't really act on it much, even in high school. But then in college, that's when kind of things started to spiral. So my freshman year, I gained some weight, as many people do. And yes. Then I studied abroad my sophomore year, and I just had such an amazing time, and I was so happy, and I came back with a boyfriend and a lot of new friends, and I was just really happy and eating and but enjoying my food and really making choices around my food for the first time. I wasn't surrounded by my family and a lot of people not force feeding me or forcing choices with food, but just a lot of it was for the first time, I really felt like I was in charge of my choices and I was really in charge of my life because I was so far from home. And that felt really empowering and great. And the weight that I had gained my freshman year had just come off. And the only reason I knew that was because when I got back, I started to get comments from people like, wow, oh my gosh, you lost so much weight, or you look so tiny, which they would say as a compliment, which is so interesting that that's a compliment in our society. Like, you're so tiny. And, but it got to me, it got in my head of like, oh wow, this is something I can actually control. And if I could lose that weight, how can I go further? And that was always something that, like I said before, I had been anxious about since I was a kid. So seeing this control really kind of sparked something in me, like, let me go further. And so that's when I started reading diet books and reading about veganism and reading about different diets and things to cut out and just basically getting obsessed on the internet about health and wellness and nutrition, but not necessarily in an overly orthorexic, healthy way. At that point, really, it was just about like, how can I do this? How can I lose as much weight as possible and not really let people know? And so it just like most eating disorders, it started as dieting, and then I did lose more weight and I got more comments and I got addicted to them. And then I started dieting more. And then I started not having a life because I was dieting so much. And then I just became completely crazy around food and it started to hurt my relationships and my school and my family. And the next thing I knew, you know, none of my clothes fit and everyone was worried about me. And I was basically in treatment. And at that point, I was really in denial. I was like, okay, yeah, I know I went a little bit too far with the calorie counting and the dieting and all of it, but I can get out of it by simply eating more, but I'm just going to stay in my parameters of health. And yeah, so that kind of brought me up to after college.
And then this is, and then you said it developed into orthorexia, or was that sort of when the orthorexia was also part of when you were in treatment?
Yeah. So I think they merged, and I think, you know, it's often a slippery slope, because I think with orthorexia, for me, my orthorexia, at least, it wasn't just an obsession with healthy foods and healthy eating for the reason of being overly healthy or, you know, for my mortality, or it wasn't like for disease prevention. It was for the purpose, it was for aesthetic reasons. Like I loved eating healthy foods and getting obsessed with healthy foods and healthy eating. But if you told me that that had no, you know, correlation with my weight or how my clothes would fit me, I would probably not do that. You know, so if I really got honest with myself, it was like, oh, at that point, it wasn't, it had nothing to do. The two had nothing to do with each other. Like I was definitely still wanting to do it as a way to control my body because I had so much fear of gaining weight or being overweight or my weight not being in my control. It was just something that, and it's still, you know, is something that is in part of me, but I have done so much work on body image and I've changed things around so much since then. But anyway, so from there, I was healing the eating disorder really through the lens of orthorexia, which I realized later, but I went through a period of that and then learned so much about orthorexia and realized that I had that, and it was impacting my relationships, and it was impacting my work, it was impacting my creativity. And so then from there I learned about intuitive eating and body image and weight as a social issue, and really got angry and learned that, oh, I can accept my body the way it is, and I can make my life as a whole my masterpiece, not just my physical body, and I can find my worth outside of my body and my weight. And I'm so much more of a cool person and a chill person around food and just in general in my life. In the last few years, I've just eased up so much on all of this control and just let more go and let more go and let more go, just like I'm peeling away layers of an onion. And now I think I'm, of course, it's still, I still have days and I still have bad body image moments, but I know how to shift out of them and not let them spiral into days or weeks and really take me out of the other stuff that is actually interesting and actually what life is about now. Now I finally realize that.
Yeah, I think it's always so funny how, like, an eating disorder never really goes away. But then again, it kind of does. It's this weird fluctuation between the two. Like, earlier when we were talking about those healthy brownies with figs, like, I understand your excitement over that, for sure. But then you could also have, like, what if you had a friend who didn't know about the last couple of years and how you have recovered and how you've changed? And they were, and what if they're, like, you know, what if their, like, radar went off and it's like, oh, no, Katie shouldn't be talking about food that way.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, but you're okay, you know, and you're allowed to enjoy foods no matter what they are, healthy, quote unquote, not healthy, quote unquote. You know, like, these rules that we put upon ourselves are also sort of, they still exist in society. And it's, I mean, I guess it's part of why eating disorders are so prevalent. So I don't know. It's interesting because, like, I can totally hear you where you are, because I feel like I'm, you and I are sisters in that way, that, like, we are very similar about food and excitement about food and all types of food.
Yeah.
But it's like what used to define us has changed. But at the same time, like, we couldn't have that relationship with the food had we not had that previous unhealthy relationship with the food either.
Yeah, completely. And I think that the judgment around that is something that I used to think about a lot a few years ago when people were still kind of, I felt, you know, which again, any judgment that you feel is like a boomerang of the judgment that you're getting, because I had so much judgment towards other people and what they were eating and what I was eating and if it was okay and what did they think of what I was eating and all of that. And now that's just like completely dissolved for me. I don't even know how it went away. But a few years ago, I had a lot of angst around the fact of, like, oh, well, they think I'm still, you know, in my old ways of eating and being, if I'm eating this really healthy thing, or should I show them how much I'm eating, or I just want them to know I'm okay. And then I finally realized it's like, well, this is the way that I'm eating, and I can't control what people think of me in this area of my life or any other. So I'm just going to do it and enjoy it, and it's going to be what it's going to be. But I think, yeah, that definitely creeps up from time to time. And I think going back to what I was talking about before with how I grew up around food, I think the being independent in the way that I can make my choices around food is still so liberating to me as an adult. And I still love I love being an adult so much, and the fact that I can eat really healthy foods if I want. I can also indulge if I want, but it's my choice and I'm the one completely in charge of how I'm eating and how I'm feeding myself and how I'm nourishing myself. And right now I do gravitate towards healthy foods and I do gravitate towards things that make me feel really good, which might be as a contrast in my way of rebelling from how I did grow up. And I've heard before, people who grew up, you know, on granola and healthy foods before that was trendy, you know, had a period where they did indulge on not so quote unquote healthy foods. And so I think that might be part of it. And then I think, you know, the other thing with my eating disorder And as you know, it's totally a control issue. And I felt like I was so not in control of my life and the way that I grew up being so smothered. I was like, well, I'm in control of my body and I'm going to rebel by making my body as vastly different from how I grew up and how I ate and really making this statement of, I'm going to challenge the views that I grew up with around food and the way that my family ate, and I'm going to take this into my own hands and eat in a completely different way and walk into a health food store somewhere I'd never been as a child, and so I think that was definitely part of it too.
Can we go a little bit? We only have like about 10 minutes left, but let's jump into your book and journaling. And I'm wondering how your relationship with journaling, and how that relates to food, if at all. What are
Yeah.
your thoughts?
Well, it's funny. I got the idea for the book when I was in treatment for the eating disorder. So I was surrounded by therapists and coaches and family and friends and so many people caring about me. But during that time, I just felt dreadfully lonely. You know how you can be like surrounded by people, but still feel super lonely?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I was also reading a lot of self-help. So I even had coaches like in my books. And so I was reading every self-help book under the sun, and I had a gift card from college graduation. I was standing in a bookstore and I was in the self-help section as usual, looking at diet books and self-help books. And I was like, ugh, I don't want any of these, but I want to spend this gift card. So I wandered into the journal, the stationery section, and I just bought this colorful journal intuitively and spent the summer outside writing in it, and I felt so much relief. It was just so cathartic for me to be authentic and real and myself, and I was able to say the things that I was most afraid to say that I didn't even want to say to my therapist because I'm a people pleaser and like I wanted her to like me, and I was able to really say these dark, negative thoughts that I was afraid to claim out loud, and I was able to say, these really light thoughts that were too lofty of goals that I was afraid to say out loud. I was able to really like put my full spectrum of emotions on the paper and be that vulnerable with myself was a stepping stone for me to be take that vulnerability and that self-awareness that journaling gave me and bring it into my relationships and into my therapy and into my healing and into all just my life in general. It helped me get to know myself in a way that nothing else could. And I didn't journal growing up. I never really allowed myself to see myself until I started journaling. And so that's how the idea for the book was born. And then from there, basically, whenever someone told me they had a problem, or whenever I was talking with a friend or someone who followed my blog or whoever, and they were asking for advice, or I was trying to give advice because I'm just a person that does that, I would be like, yeah, have you ever like journaled about this? It's kind of weird, but writing or expressive writing, have you ever tried that? And they would be like, oh no, I'm not a writer. I don't have anything to say. Nothing would come out. I don't have time. And I really started to think they had so much resistance to it, which randomly I didn't at first when I started because I just so needed it. And so I really thought about that. And I was like, well, I'm also not really a writer and I didn't really have anything to say, but somehow it was cathartic to me and somehow it gave me so much relief. And so I started to give people prompts and journaling questions to ponder and things to get started with and really started to hold their hands through it. And then they did it. Then they tried it and they had the same results that I did. They felt better. They were more self-aware and it felt good to them, which is, I think, the only goal of anything. So anyway, eventually that turned into a book deal that now has a bunch of journal prompts, 55 of them, in fact, on all different areas of your life, from getting organized to a lot of body image stuff to feeling and healing and relationships. And it's kind of like a greatest hits of everything that I've learned from doing basically what I like jokingly call like a graduate degree in self-development and personal growth, like all put into one book.
I love that. A graduate degree. I like it.
Yeah.
And also, I just want to ask another just quick question since I never interviewed anyone from Detroit.
Yeah.
Where do you like to eat in Detroit?
Oh my gosh. Well, again, for me, I really like eating healthy foods. I really like vegan foods, and I don't like to put labels on myself of anything really, but there is this amazing, there's two actually vegan places right by where I live, but the one that I'll shout out here is called Om Cafe. And as strange as it is, it's this macrobiotic place, and their macro plate is like my favorite thing in the world to eat. And I have it like multiple times a week, and it has this tahini dressing situation that is just so good. And they have like a rotating taco of the week. So that's probably my favorite place. But I think if you want the true Detroit experience, there's so many other places that other people would say, but if you're coming to visit me, I'm definitely taking you there.
I will come visit you and eat those taco plates, but try to turn them into taco pie. Ooh. A taco pie you will like.
Actually, you should just come home to my friends from high school loved it. So we had like open campus for lunch, and everyone would want to come over to my house every day for lunch to like have leftover cold taco pie. And I would be like making myself a peanut butter and jelly while my friends raided my refrigerator. So everybody else really liked my mom's taco pie. So you'll have home with me and she'll make it.
Well, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like it would go great with the large kale salad.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, that's my style.
To have her. I got to find out from her, actually. She just texted me during this podcast, which is funny, but I got to find out exactly what's in it. I'm thinking lots of cheese, Doritos. I don't know. I'll find out and report back.
Okay. I can't wait. I'm holding my breath with anticipation.
Yes. I'll start massaging the kale while my mom works on the taco pie. Perfect combo.
Where can people find you?
I am very easily Googleable. Just give me, you know, a quick Google, Katie Dalebout, and everything should come up. But I'm just at Katie Dalebout on Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter, the whole gang. And yeah, and my website's katiedalebout.com. So nice and easy.
That is nice and easy. Thank you so much for being on the show. And everyone, check out Katie's show.
Yes, and my episode with Lynn will be airing very, very soon. It was four times as long as this one because my show is so long, but I love it so much. And I'm sad this one's over. I could talk to you forever. I just want to hang out all the time.
We can continue talking after I've hung up.
Okay, good.
Phew. On the rest of the world.
So, well, yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show.